video information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Up North News with Matt Kreitlow starts now.
All right, let's start this hour. We're going to talk about primary elections. The Wisconsin one is next week, Tuesday, but several states had primaries yesterday around the country, including some battleground states that are covered by some sister outlets to Up North News. So by way of background, Up North News was started under the parent company known as Courier Newsroom. Courier operates 8 such state-based outlets in Arizona, Florida, North Carolina, Virginia, Michigan, Iowa, Wisconsin. Hope I'm not forgetting anybody. Over in Michigan, it's called The Gander. And Isaac Constance joins us now from Michigan, from The Gander, to talk to us about the results of the primary elections there yesterday and the significance that might have, not just on the Wisconsin primary, but also on the general election, as everybody looks at who won and lost yesterday. There were some big advances for conspiracy theorists and Trumpers and what have you. But there was also a massive setback in the state of Kansas, where voters overwhelmingly shot down an attempt to remove, you know, abortion rights protections from the Constitution. So a bit of a mixed bag, but we're going to start with Michigan. Isaac, thanks for joining us. Pleasure to have you here.
Yeah, thanks, Pat. Good morning. Didn't get too much sleep last night.
I'll bet you didn't. And I appreciate you giving us a little extra time today. To get into the Michigan primary, there was a similarity in Wisconsin that almost rocked the gubernatorial primary here. And that was with just one candidate, Tim Michaels, who filled out his nomination petition incorrectly. And as a result, could have been kicked off the ballot. And we, as we reviewed at the time at Up North News, you know, people have been kicked off the ballot for such things in the past, most notably not getting enough signatures because, you know, once you cross out the duplicates or the ones that were, you know, garnered improperly, they didn't reach a threshold to qualify for the ballot. So, Isaac, before we even get into the primary, much like in Wisconsin, you guys had the problem of candidates getting knocked off the ballot writ large. You had many candidates knocked off the ballot. What happened?
Right. Well, this primary was crazy from the get-go. We had the favorite and the second favorite. That's James Craig, who is the former chief of police in Detroit, as well as Perry Johnson, who's a self-proclaimed quality guru, ironically, get kicked off the ballot for not having enough valid signatures.
Wait. The quality guru got kicked off the ballot for signatures? You can't buy that kind of a cell phone. That's great.
That's just scratching the surface of a crazy election year in Michigan. But we had 3 other candidates as well get kicked off. And, you know, that led to a splintered Republican Party from the jump. James Craig, actually, that's the former Detroit chief of police, he actually attempted to run a write-in campaign for the primary. Then we had another who formed a new party and was trying to run in a third lane. So it was a crazy year.
But all told, 5 candidates, potential candidates, kicked off the bat. 5 of, wasn't it 10 that were announced at the time?
Yeah, half of the field overall.
Wow, that's like one of those bike crashes in the Tour de France where suddenly there's a pileup and, you know, your front runner and some others are not there and you have to deal with the leftovers. So the leftovers are in the field running for the hope to run against incumbent Democrat Gretchen Whitmer. And so take us through, briefly here, what that primary looked like and who emerged from it last night.
Right. So you had 4 big candidates. One was a former Western Michigan football player and chiropractor who made a lot of noise at the outbreak of COVID-19 about how restrictions were affecting the business. You had another who was a prominent business owner and car dealer in southeastern Michigan, had numerous instances of racism, sexism reported against him. Another was Tudor Dixon, who, of course, ended up taking the primary last night. She was a former TV news anchor and
they're the worst.
And an actor. And she has really risen to prominence because she's had intense backing from the DeVos family, which is kind of the head honcho of Michigan politics from the conservative side of things. So Dixon wound up taking it. The whole thing was up in the air up until Trump endorsed Dixon. And that really united the party.
Wait a minute. Donald Trump endorsed the attractive media personality who would spew his talking points. I'm shocked. I'll take care of the editorializing. Don't worry. But I still, you know, as soon as I, you know, saw that and saw, you know, again with Carrie Lake in Arizona, you certainly have the makings of a party that is not yet even close to being ready to breaking from former President Donald Trump. Isaac Constance is our guest with the Gander in Michigan, our sister outlet to Up North News there. We are going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk a bit more about now the general election campaign of this, you know, Trumper going up against the incumbent Democrat. Similar situation to what we may find in Wisconsin next week and some of the other races and those parallels here in the Great Midwest. We'll be right back. You're Up North.
From Lake Wasota, once again, here's Pat Kratlow.
We will continue to see scattered thunderstorms moving across Wisconsin this morning and this afternoon. Continued warm and humid for at least the next few days. If you want to reach us here, our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. And our phone number is 715-388-7155. Isaac Constance from the Gander in Michigan is joining us to talk a bit about Michigan's primary, which was yesterday, and how our neighboring state has had things happen that maybe are a preview of coming attractions here in Wisconsin. It was a former TV news anchor and Trumper, Tudor Dixon. She emerged from the primary yesterday to run against Gretchen Whitmer. Gretchen Whitmer, an incumbent Democrat like Tony Evers here, Isaac. So does that necessarily mean that she, like Evers, faces some headwinds coming into this midterm cycle?
Yeah, well, ordinarily incumbency's an advantage. You know, that's kind of been the tried and true tale throughout politics. But recently we have a lot of candidates like Dixon, a conservative commentator, a businesswoman, who's been running on being an outsider, which is a really big part of her campaign, is not having these Lansing, or in your case, Madison connections, and being able to foster more of a connection with average everyday people in a very populist sort of movement. So Whitmer does face a little bit of a challenge there because, truth be told, yeah, there's a decent segment of the Michigan population that didn't really like how the government responded to COVID-19 or is getting swept up in these culture wars about public schools. But the thing is, overall, Whitmer's approval rating hangs far higher compared to other Democrats, who are in office. So Whitmer is still a very well-liked figure here. Dixon is in no way the favorite. Whitmer is the favorite. But with that being said, Dixon probably presents the Republicans' last remaining chance of beating her after we saw all of the other candidates disqualified earlier.
Well, and you also had beyond the governor's race, you know, in terms of indications of what might come, you also had a pro-impeachment representative, Peter Meyer, who was defeated by, as described by, I think it was Charlie Sykes, described him as MAGA nutball John Gibbs. Tell us a bit about Peter Meyer and, you know, what shaped that race.
Yeah, so this isn't even isolated within the Meyer and Gibbs race, but let's start with Meyer. Meyer, as a freshman representative, voted to impeach Trump just weeks into assuming office. So that takes some guts. It does. And he was kind of an, even though he was a newer member of Congress, he was kind of a part of that Republican old guard, you know, the grand old party, really. And so Meyer also voted for a number of, or maybe not a number, but a few bipartisan environmental bills, some gun control. So, and that's a story within West Michigan politics. In fact, we had a longtime representative, Fred Upton, who's hanging up the boots. He's retiring and stepping away at the end of his term, who had a similar voting record this past session to Peter Meyer. The fact that Gibbs won shows the weight of not just Trump's endorsement, but voting to impeach the former president. That's really what did in Meyer, because if you look at his record in West Michigan, his family name, Meyer, it's the same Meyer's store that you see strewn all throughout Michigan. And you look at how his record paralleled Fred Upton's, and he's a veteran. He is a very big name in West Michigan. That shows this guy was really flying high just off Trump's endorsement, and he managed to carry it by a couple percentage points.
And it is, I understand that the Democratic Party spent more than a couple dollars to try to promote Gibbs over Meyer, basically trying to, you know, let the self, you know, let who they describe as a nutball win, so that, you know, Democrats can then maybe win the district, because you've got this far right candidate who now has emerged from the primary. So what does the general look like? You know, is this a case of Democrats should have been careful what they wish for?
There's wings of the party that feel that way. Some think Gibbs is the easier candidate to beat because he's not going to connect with independents in the same way. He's an election conspiracy theorist. And he also has a series of Facebook posts from before his time in government. And, but that derailed his trial when he was fighting to be the, I believe it was acting director, but check me on that, of the Office of Personnel Management within the federal government. That's their, Federal Workforce Management Agency. So Gibbs has a lot of baggage that he's bringing into this general race that could dissuade independent voters from going to his side that Meyer doesn't really have. This is a district that's traditionally been red, but he's facing a Democratic challenger and Hillary Scholten, who's very popular and has a good profile for this race. With that being said, Meyer called the decision to boost Gibbs undemocratic, and he's not the only one. Some think that if you're trying to get rid of the Republicans who actually voted to impeach Trump and have voted for bipartisanship, what happens if there's a big upset and Gibbs takes office? Maybe things get only worse from here.
That's right. And Meyer actually wrote an essay day before yesterday that I just came across, where he takes aim at the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, the DCCC, launching a six-figure ad buy to promote Gibbs, the election denier. And that DCCC ad buy, over $400,000, was more than Gibbs raised over the entire duration of his campaign. In other words, Meyer writes, the Democrats are not merely attempting to boost a candidate over the finish line. They are subsidizing his entire campaign. And that is a $400,000 bet that the Democrat is still going to take that district in the end. You know that district better than me, whether that's going to be, is that going to be a nail biter of a race, we think, in November?
Oh, it's tight. Yeah, it's not a sure thing whatsoever. So there's a serious game of chicken here that the DCCC is playing, because you're not sure that Scholten's going to come out of that. Maybe Gibbs is the more favorable candidate. They would know better than I would. But at the same time, this is a historically red district, and Michigan is actually on the verge of not having any Black representation in Congress for the first time since the 50s. So that plays into this race as well, where, you know, maybe some voters are motivated to come out and put Gibbs' name down. So it'll be interesting. I'm curious though, Pat, did you see the actual commercial from the Democrats boosting Gibbs?
No, tell us about it.
It was, I mean, so transparent. It was a case of reverse psychology that they were trying to play, which was Gibbs is too conservative. He's too this or that, which is of course the type of message that every candidate is trying to espouse in the first place. But it was pretty much saying that
it's again, as somebody who ran for Congress in 2012, I'm not gonna have a lot of great things to say about the DCCC. You know, there's some good people there doing some good work, but you know, they're not always the smartest people in the room, and we'll find out how they do in Michigan, which has that going forward compared to Wisconsin, where we have in the Republican governor's primary, we have a full blown, you know, Trump, you know, election denier in Tim Ramthune, but he is running a distant third behind former Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clefish and, you know, millionaire construction company owner Tim Michaels. Tim Michaels is trying to be that election denier. He's actually trying to be, you know, DeSantis, which is, you know, Trump's evil twin, as if that were possible. So we don't have the thing where Democrats are tempted to come in and try to play in the race. So we'll see if that dynamic shows up later for some reason in the general, but not as much shenanigans in the primary compared to in Michigan. Michigan also has, like Wisconsin, has gone through redistricting. Mm-hmm. And again, this is something that we haven't seen here for some time. I can't recall the last time. We are seeing at the legislative level where incumbents are being pitted against each other. Surprisingly, in Wisconsin, well, because Republicans control the legislature thanks to gerrymandering by such an overwhelming margin, the only incumbent versus incumbent primaries by and large involve Republicans. But in Michigan, you had two Democrats from Congress going against each other, right?
Right. And that's Haley Stevens, who was a representative from the 11th district, the first woman to ever represent that district, first Andy Levin, who's also got a famous name here in Michigan, a big political figure here, and a member of the progressive wing of the party a little bit more than Stevens. Stevens took it. It was actually pretty one-sided race at the end of it. But that's because Michigan lost a congressional seat thanks to the 2020 census count that happened to various states. Some of the states in the Southwest picked up seats. Some of the states like us in the Rust Belt lost a seat. But that was only one part of this equation. The other part was we saw mass redistricting throughout the state that pitted incumbents against each other in the state legislature. And forced people to make a decision for what district they actually wanted to run in. So for the first time, and this is really the big story that no national outlets are following, first time in decades, Michigan Democrats have a good chance to take the state House and the state Senate. They haven't controlled the state Senate since 1983. So if they do that and Whitmer stays in power, then Michigan, which is a blue state, could really pass some progressive policies.
It's interesting to see that in Michigan and you know, our sister outlet in Pennsylvania, the Keystone as well, has had to follow a scenario where you are a marginally blue state, but a legislature that, you know, has Republican control and the, you know, the tensions and or the gridlock that brings. So, I mean, you really do make it sound like not just that this could go either way for Whitmer or for control of the legislature, but, you know, for outlets like the Gander and for Up North News, we really have this opportunity to tell voters quite directly over the next 97 days, your vote matters. Your vote matters a lot more than you think it does. And I sense that'll be a theme you guys are sharing as well.
Yeah. And we'll see where the issues fall for voters. You know, I mean, abortion's on the docket in Michigan. So is the economy. So is a whole lot else. So we'll see where they fall.
That's right. Isaac Constance from the Gander. Gandernewsroom.com, right? and or look for Gander Newsroom on social media and follow what they're doing there. Great to talk to you. Thank you so much for spending some time with us.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Pat.
All right. Have a great day. When we come back, Luke and I will chat a bit more about headlines that are going on, including some of the other results that took place. As mentioned, in Kansas, there was a vote on an abortion ban. There was also a lot happening in Arizona, where the Trump wing of the party had some very big victories. So we'll review those and other headlines as well as we work toward the November general election. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. We'll be right back. Tomorrow on the program, Senator Tammy Baldwin will join us during the 8 o'clock hour. 9 o'clock tomorrow, candidate for Congress Mark Newman in the 3rd District. 10 o'clock, Kia Vakil, the national correspondent for Courier Newsroom, parent of Up North News. And we will talk about more of this week's big headlines. If you missed it yesterday, we had three of the four candidates on for the 3rd Congressional District who are running to succeed Ron Kind. And there was a little bit of news there, perhaps not surprising, but maybe to some based on the reaction we saw online. And that was coming from State Senator Brad Paff, who has received Ron Kind's endorsement to succeed him in Congress and is endorsing him over the three other Democrats in the race. It's not easy for anybody in a four-candidate field to stand apart from the others, you know, in a single party by and large. But Brad Paff managed to do that yesterday by answering my question of, you know, his reaction to his former boss, Ron Kind, being one of only five Democrats to vote against the assault weapons ban, which was proposed last week. And Brad Paff indicated that he felt the same way, that he would not necessarily support an assault weapons ban. He did note that weapons of war have no place on our streets and that he would support red flag laws and closing loopholes and expanded background checks. And all of those things are fine ideas. But there was an assault weapons ban from 1994 to 2004. Mass shootings went down when it was in place. Mass shootings skyrocketed when Republicans let it expire in 2004. Some of the framing around an assault weapons ban is that, you know, the government is out to take our guns. And as you're going to hear me say quite frequently, nobody wants your damn guns. If you're a hunter who, you know, is a law-abiding citizen, it has nothing to do with that. And the original assault weapons ban did not take away guns that already existed, guns that were already on the streets. It banned the new sale of assault weapons and the manufacture of them and the importation. But all of the assault weapons that existed prior to 1994 were grandfathered in. And keep that in mind when people say, well, the assault weapons ban, you know, didn't really work. It had a negligible impact, if any. Well, sure, because every other assault weapon was still on the streets. It wasn't a ban as if nobody can own one. It was a ban on the sale of new ones, putting more guns in the pipeline. Bottom line, it worked. 2004 came during the George W. Bush administration. Republicans were in control of Congress, allowed it to expire. We have seen what has happened with mass shootings since. The framing around this is that, you know, government's taking our guns and we like to hunt with our guns. We have a heritage. Whenever you hear heritage or culture, pay attention to what's behind that. Because, yeah, you may have a heritage or a culture of something. That is not a get out of jail free card for any attempt to alter behavior. And in this case, the behavior is maybe we shouldn't have assault weapons, semi-automatic weapons, you know, easily put into people's hands where they can commit more mass shooting. Rebecca Cook, one of the other candidates, said it most succinctly yesterday that she does believe in the culture of hunting in Wisconsin, but that nobody needs an AR-15 in deer camp. That's it. Simple as that. Nobody's taking hunting rifles. Nobody ever was. So Brad Paff made some news yesterday about that. But I also want to be fair and talk about the political impact of that and how that may actually help him. We've talked repeatedly about how the 3rd Congressional District is very divided, very evenly split, Democrats, Republicans, and which way the independent voters are going to go. So by taking that more moderate position, however distasteful it may be to gun safety advocates, that may be what PAF needs to either come out of the primary, and it certainly will help him in the general election when you've got the entire swath of the electorate. So what he's got to do now with that position and with the heat he's taking from some Democrats is withstand that and come through the primary. He's either going to not come through that primary because Democrats didn't see him as serious enough about gun safety, or he is going to come through that primary because people appreciated, quote unquote, his more moderate position on not being real keen on an assault weapons ban. So we will, you know, find out on Tuesday what that means for Brad PAF taking that kind of an approach.
Yeah, and Pat, if any of the listeners out there in the audience want to go check out the podcast, if you go over to Spotify, we've got the Up North News podcast with Pat Kreitlow on Spotify. So you can like, subscribe, rate the show on there, and you'll be able to listen to all three of the interviews that you had yesterday on your smart device through Spotify.
Question from an old man here. What is Spotify? I've seen Spotify. I've heard of Spotify. Here's what I know about Spotify. I have a MacBook, and on startup,
and it doesn't
Spotify
work.
Spotify always starts up.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't have an account. Sense. I don't want an account. I have Apple Music, and I have these things called CDs. I might even have some cassettes lying around. But you know, Spotify always comes up. I'm like, no, I don't need you.
It's
right
fair
now.
Enough. It's an excellent question, Pat. Pretty much, Apple was late to the game. If you remember the iTunes Store when it first started, Apple always charged you 99 cents per song. So if you wanted to be able to amass a large library on Apple, you had to pay per song or per album. And so Spotify came along as a platform that you subscribe to monthly, but you can have unlimited access to all of the music, podcasts, and everything that Spotify hosts through their service. And so Spotify was kind of one of those things. I want to say probably picked up steam about 2012, where Apple Music wasn't doing a subscription-based service until much later in the game, probably like 15 or 16. So Spotify was kind of one of those that is now a huge platform for music, podcasts, and a ton of different audio mediums because they got into the subscription service first.
Including us now.
Including us now.
That's nice. I'm not going to do it. I know what I sound like. I get to listen to myself for 3 hours a day. And working from home, this is the most I have spoken in a very long time. You know, my wife talks to people all day long and then comes home and just wants peace and quiet, but I'm talking her ear off because I finally have somebody to talk to. So y'all are really helping my marriage here because now I have you to talk to instead. And that way, all I have to do, you know, when she comes home from work is have the old fashioned ready, push it across the counter, and then we can both decompress from a very busy workday. I promised we were going to talk a bit about some of the other states that were going having primaries yesterday. And Arizona, you know, they just went bat crap crazy, essentially, with Kari Lake, again, another former media personality, I think TV news anchor, winning the GOP primary for governor. And so, you know, we've got a full-blown, you know, right winger, you know, who is coddling attacks on democracy, running to be governor of a state. And Rusty Bowers, who you may recall is the Speaker of the House in the Arizona legislature, testified before the January 6th committee about the ways Trump was trying to influence him, as he did in Wisconsin and elsewhere, to monkey around with the election results. Rusty Bowers lost his primary. So it's not just that a few Republican politicians are still part of the Trump cult. There's a lot of voters out there that are still feeling like they're either buying into the narrative that you know Trump actually won, or there was some monkey business, or you know, for whatever reasons they have, they've just decided, yeah, this is the way we're going right now. And, you know, so what if it leads us to, you know, authoritarian leadership? So you also have a right winger who emerged from the Arizona primary for U.S. Senate. So Arizona is going to be one to watch now that we come to the general election and see how voters turn out. as we learned from another state last night, you can't just assume in Arizona that all those Republicans are going to win in the general, because again, now you get to go to all the voters. And that's what happened last night in Kansas, where there was a measure on the ballot that had voters overwhelmingly decide that they were not going to remove abortion rights from the state constitution. A huge, surprising victory for, you know, for people who believe in a woman's choice, who believe in, you know, medical matters being decided between a doctor and their patient, not doctor, patient, and the government. It was evidence of the continued backlash that there's going to be about the way the right-wing justices on the U.S. Supreme Court decided to repeal Roe versus Wade. They said, we're going to kick it to the states. That's what we have to live with right now. It should be a nationally, constitutionally enshrined right to abortion care, to choice. But we don't have that. It's being kicked back to the states. And Kansas was the first one to actually ask its state's voters to say, what do you want to do? And quite surprisingly, the vote was 60 to 40, essentially, a 60-40 split, saying that they will not tolerate an extreme ban on abortion. So again, all bets are off after the primary. We're going to be talking for six more days about what Rebecca Clefish has to say about Tim Michaels and what Tim Michaels has to say about Clefish. And of course, they're both dumping on Tony Evers, but you know, one will emerge, but then has to go to the general public in Wisconsin. And as we've learned in most state elections, when you vote statewide in Wisconsin, Wisconsin remains a blue state, marginally, but remains a blue state with very few surprises, except say Ron Johnson 6 years ago, when, as we discussed in the last hour, he had, you know, tens of millions of dollars in support from billionaires. He's getting that again this time, but you know, whether he gets a third term remains to be seen. By and large, Wisconsin as a state votes Democratic. The legislature should be, you know, in Democratic control right now, you know, by a very narrow margin, but still in control, but it's not, you know, because of gerrymandering. So it really comes down to that turnout. Robert Craig from Citizen Action talked about that in the last hour of the door knocking that they do to help people understand their vote matters and that they are going to be asked not just by candidates and parties, but by these independent groups to think about the positions that these candidates are taking. Don't just vote because there's an R next to their name or a D next to their name for that matter. Do it because you understand where they stand on a certain position. And in this case, where they stand on democracy itself. Do they believe in a free and fair election, or do they want to see government actually picking winners and losers the way that Trump Republicans have been advocating for? To that end, Donald Trump is coming back to Wisconsin. He's coming on Friday for a rally in support of Tim Michaels, the candidate that he has endorsed over Rebecca Clefish in the race for governor. It says on his announcement that he's going to speak in support of Michaels and the entire Wisconsin Trump ticket. Not that the entire Trump ticket will be there. It appears that Senator Ron Johnson, you know, has another matter. Something's come up. I know, oh, my arm is broken. Okay, I can't go. So there's still some distance that's being put there against the Trump wing, even by somebody like Ron Johnson, who says, well, he just doesn't want to get involved in primaries. Johnson has his own reckoning to deal with, especially after, again, saying yesterday that Social Security and Medicare ought to just be turned into discretionary spending. And that is wild. It is right in line with the Republican Senate plan put forward by Senator Rick Scott from Florida that says, you know what we ought to do? We ought to scrap everything the federal government does after 5 years and then hold it up for a vote again. Really? You think things are crazy now. You want every year to tell seniors whether they will or won't have a certain level of Social Security, they will or won't have a certain level of Medicare benefits, to tell people that they will or won't, you know, in their workplace, have healthcare coverage, be able to access Medicaid and what have you. You know, good luck with that. But that's the chaos theory that we're looking to get from Ron Johnson, if he's able to, you know, if he were to get his way. Still to come in the program here, we are bringing back Kirk Bangstad and Kristen Lyerly. The Wednesday Night Crew is getting back together for an hour, and we'll have a guest as well. That's coming up next. You're Up North.
Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
And I should clarify, I said up next when I talked about Kirk Bangstad, Kristen Lyerly, I meant in the next hour. You have to put up with me prattling for another 8 or 9 minutes, and then we're going to get the Wednesday night team back together. What do I mean by that? If you didn't follow, for the past year and a half, I have been part of a show that Kirk Bangstad co-created from the Minocqua Brewing Company, and he called it the Up North Podcast. And that was done Wednesday night on a couple of radio stations and then turned into a podcast, which was shared via social media with an audience up north. Kristen Lyerly, an OBGYN from the Green Bay area, a former legislative candidate, was one of the co-hosts along with me. We would have guests on, and Kirk is going to be taking a summer vacation here. And then, you know, I'm not sure what's going to happen with the Wednesday night show, but I said, you know, why don't you at least come on for an hour instead of an hour Wednesday nights, come on for an hour Wednesday mornings. And we'll, you know, continue to banter about what's in the news. We'll talk to guests and such. So we're going to do that for the first time in the next hour. And we are scheduled to talk to Jillian Bettino, a Wausau physician, who is one of three candidates, I believe, on the Democratic side running for state treasurer here in the great Midwest. Luke, when you think of the Midwest, what comes to mind? If we were playing word association, what's the first thing that comes to mind when you hear Midwest?
Home.
Home. Okay. What is it that makes the Midwest the Midwest?
That is an excellent question, because I feel like there's a few states that are undoubtedly Midwest. When you think of them, no doubt. But then on the perimeter, it gets kind of questionable. And so,
what evokes Midwestern culture? What's something that you either a word you use or a product or something? What really stands out that you're not going to have elsewhere? And when you hear that word, you go, "Oh yeah, they're from the Midwest."
Casserole.
Ooh, casserole. That's a good one. Yeah, yes.
That's probably...
It's not on the list. Not on this list. What? I have from the Washington Post.
What?
Which asked asked, what is the most Midwestern thing on earth? And, you know, you can survey people all day long, the way I just did with Luke here, but they found a way to get data on this. Airbnb. Because everybody wants to describe their Airbnb, and they noticed that a lot of Airbnb descriptions had something like, you know, loaded with Midwestern charm, or, you know, a good-natured Midwestern location. And they thought, well, let's use Airbnb descriptions of what they say about either the home they're trying to rent or where they're located. And based on those key words, you know, that is how we'll determine, you know, what is the most Midwestern thing. Well, the first thing they did was, by description, what are the most Midwestern states? And I'm not surprised that, you know, Ohio is way down on the list, because in my mind, Ohio is not in the Midwest, neither is Missouri. But somehow neither is Kansas. Somehow they rated higher than Minnesota, which is as Midwest as it gets. Iowa was number one, Indiana number two, Wisconsin number three, followed by North Dakota, and then Kansas and Nebraska. But let's get back to the Midwestern things. In all of these various Midwestern states, what is it they use most often that they don't use in any other regions of the country. And I'll go from bottom to top in these, Luke. And you know, you tell me if these work or not for you. Paddle boat. I guess the old timey one, perhaps.
Do they use a different term for it elsewhere? Because I feel like you could see paddle boats anywhere you go. It doesn't necessarily have to be the Midwest.
I'm thinking if they're talking about the steamboats that went up and down the Mississippi back in the day, perhaps. I'm not sure.
See, I imagine the two person that you sit side by side and you got to paddle across the lake.
Oh well, yep. You know what? It could be that too. Next up on the list was Amish, then snowmobile. That one makes total sense. You know, you're not going to get a lot of snowmobile rentals in Florida or whatnot. Largemouth and smallmouth made the list. So when you're talking about bass, those are in a lot of Midwestern descriptions. Supper, which I guess a lot of people use dinner instead, but supper, still a Midwestern term.
For supper club, though, I would assume the association there.
Of course, you got to have a supper club nearby serving supper. By the way, over on my stand over here, I got two great books about the history of Wisconsin supper clubs. And we really have to dive into that at some point here. Great books. Glacial is on the list. Where are we at here? We're up to number 7, I think, Glacial. Number 6 would be Blacktop. Do they not use the word blacktop, or is it like such a feature in Midwestern Airbnbs? Like, oh, they've got blacktop. We've got to stay there. Lutheran is how it gets described all the time in Airbnbs in the Midwest. I don't know. Conservatory is next. That's number 3 on the list. So apparently locations near a conservatory, and maybe it's just not a term used for parks and such elsewhere. I don't know. We've got the Irvine Park Zoo here in Chippewa. So conservatory is not one I use a lot. Number 2, not a surprise, Heartland, because, you know, you're in the Midwest, you're in the Heartland. There's no denying that. You're not going to say that, you know, Nevada is the heartland of America. Get out of here. Doesn't work that way. So I've given you a bunch to start with, Luke. We're up to number 1. What is the most Midwestern thing out there?
Cozy? I don't know.
Cozy.
I'm trying to figure out what I would like hear for an Airbnb.
Let me help you
descriptor.
Out here. You're at a supper club. Let's go to the supper club.
Rustic?
Nope. We're going to go for a food. What are you going to order at the supper club?
Fish fry.
And what's the best fish fry?
Oh, now you're going to put me on the spot, because that could start. Those are fighting words.
Oh,
if
no.
You pick the wrong one.
There's no doubt. It's walleye. Walleye is the most Midwestern thing in the United States, according to the way that Airbnb descriptions are made all across the Midwestern states, which, again, you don't expect it. But it makes perfect sense. You know, I don't think there's a lot of walleye fishing any place. I mean, you have to go north. You know, you have to go to Canada if you're going to get any more serious about walleye than we are here in the Midwest. People are certainly chasing them here on Lake Wissota, which is all that I really thought was here. And when our daughters were younger, you know, they'd say, can we swim off the dock? There's no, you know, nasty fish, right? And we're like, no, I'm sure it's fine. Panfish, bluegills, sunnies. Well, then they end up, you know, meeting boys who are big time fishers, and off our dock, they're catching catfish and sturgeon. I mean, they're catching monsters. And our daughters are right away looking at us going, you lied. I'm like, of course, you were 4 and 6 at the time. Of course, we're going to lie to you. It's what parents do to get you to jump in the lake. Otherwise, you know, we're going to have to keep entertaining you ourselves. When we come back, we will now have Kirk Bankstead, Kristen Lyerly, and Jillian Bettino joining us. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. We'll be right back.